Today on the Music City Audible, we're talking about players who are on thin ice on this roster as the Titans go through OTAs, why these players are on thin ice, and who are they, plus why the Titans were sneaky winners in the Myles Garrett and AJ Brown trades that went down on Monday. This is the Music City Audible. Let's get to it. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Music City Audible, a Tennessee Titans podcast. I'm your host, Justin Graver, full-time NFL podcast producer for Odyssey, and joining me, as always, the managing editor of Titan Size, publisher of NFL Draft on SI, my co-host, Justin Mello. Justin, how you doing? Tuesday, June 2nd, the Titans in the midst of an OTA break. We don't have a ton to talk about, but we got some major NFL news on Monday. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Like you said, major NFL news. Two big blockbuster trades that went down on Monday afternoon. And also some Titans players we're going to cover who are on thin ice at OTAs, you know, sort of looking over their shoulder on this roster as mini camp and training camp approaches shortly. Not a lot happening, but there was a lot that happened in the NFL yesterday, and I think we've got some good talking points today.
Yeah, I think I said this right before we started, but yesterday might have been the single biggest June NFL news day that I can remember with, you called them two blockbuster trades. I'll call them one extremely expected predicted trade that's been talked about for months, which was AJ Brown going to reunite with Mike Vrabel and the New England Patriots, and Myles Garrett, which I think if this happened this time last year, wouldn't have been that surprising, but Myles Garrett getting traded after they went through the whole drama of last offseason demanding a trade. Myles isn't going anywhere. They signed him to this massive contract. Myles Garrett ends up in the Los Angeles Rams. But Justin, I was thinking about this in regards to the Titans, because we did a whole episode yesterday, and you know, just a little reveal behind the curtain to our audience. We recorded that yesterday morning, pretty early morning, way before those trades went down. We talked about why this is the time of year you start to see all this movement, and then later in the day, bang, two massive moves go down. But the Titans are sneaky winners for both of these trades because the Titans are slated to play the Philadelphia Eagles, where AJ Brown was, in week two, and are slated to play the Cleveland Browns in week seven, where Myles Garrett was, you know, the game wrecker on that side of on their defense. The Titans do not play the Patriots or the Rams this year. And in fact, they played both of those teams last year. So get those two matchups. Like the Patriots, you know, it depends on where the Titans finish in the division. The Rams, basically a once every 4 years matchup. Get those matchups out of the way last year when the Titans were really bad and had no chance of competing, and it didn't matter who was on their schedule, they were going to be bad. And this year, you have a chance to take a step forward with what could be a slightly easier schedule that I think was definitely made easier yesterday when you ship off two of the best players on two opponents on the Titans schedule.
Yeah, no doubt about it. The Titans will be happy not to see Myles Garrett. Although they ran the ball at him effectively last year and won that True. Game against Cleveland. He only had one sack. Right. But I'll definitely only. Be happy not to see AJ Brown or Mike Vrabel, I think, for that matter, on the schedule. Although you are forgetting one thing. They're probably going to play the Patriots in the AFC Championship game and then the Rams in the Super Bowl. So they might right. still see AJ Brown and Myles Garrett, not during the regular season.
That's a fair point. I will say if the Titans get a chance to see AJ Brown or Myles Garrett this year, something went incredibly right. Okay, Justin, let's get to today's topic. Players on thin ice with the Titans right now. These are guys that you said they're looking over their shoulder. They may not be playing super well or standing out in OTAs. That doesn't apply to everyone on this list, but definitely guys who are in danger of losing their starting spot or their role on the team or even their place on the roster altogether. And we'll start with a player who has had an up and down career so far in Tennessee, but mostly down. And he's had an up and down OTA period so far, but mostly down. Titans quarterback Will Levis, who still turning the ball over too much. I mean, four turnovers in two open OTA practices. Like, I don't know what he's doing in the closed practices, but you cannot average two turnovers a practice in spring when you're playing mostly against second and third and fourth string players. So I think Will Levis is the obvious choice here if you got to pick somebody, if you had to pick one player on the roster who's on thin ice. To me, it is Will Levis. I don't think he'll be on the roster by September, and nothing he's doing right now in OTAs is helping his case to be Cam Ward's backup in 2026.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, obviously, they've already replaced them. You know, you go out and sign Mitchell Trubisky 2 years, I think $10.5 million. That's real backup quarterback money. At the latest OTA practice on Friday, I believe it was, he throws a screen pass that's intercepted and returned for a pick six by Solomon Thomas. He's intercepted by a guy with a fake name in Keydrain Callaghan. Like, are you kidding me, Will Levis, right? Like, they've made up their mind. And as you said, I mean, he's got an opportunity here with Mitch Trubisky not participating in this voluntary phase. Technically, he's got an opportunity to take advantage and try to show this coaching staff that he should be competing for the backup job and he's worth keeping around and developing. And yes, you know, it sounds like he's had some good moments. That first OTA practice, I think Jim Wyatt tracked him like 10 for 14. It sounded fairly decent despite the turnovers you mentioned. But overall, it just sounds like when the going gets tough because they're having a pajama party, like I said yesterday. But he's still finding ways with no pads on, you know, simulated pass rush, no contact is what I mean by that. Still finding ways to turn over the ball in rather boneheaded fashion. I'm with you. He's not on the team come September.
Who else you got on the thin ice category, maybe sticking to the offense if you had anybody else there?
Well, it doesn't have to be someone who's not performing well at OTAs. Because even though Will Levis is up and down, second name I have for you, by all accounts, is performing well at OTAs. That's running back Tajay Spears. Jim Wyatt's been very complimentary of him in both of his observation articles from the two open practices. But I think I go with him because I don't think there's anything he could realistically do this time of year, in my opinion, that takes him off thin ice, if you will. He's had injury-riddled seasons in back-to-back years. I keep pointing this out, averaged under 4 yards per carry in both 2024 and 2025, battling injury concerns. Yes, there are other issues, offense, coaching, offensive line, yada, yada. Ding me for it. I haven't been dinged for a while. I get dinged on that one. I deserve it, and I don't regret. I got the no regrets tattoo on my neck here. I regret nothing about that one. But regardless, this is why I just can't buy into too much of the Tajay Spears OTA offseason hype. He had a good OTAs last year, which was also noted by Jim Wyatt. Once the pads come on, and you start tackling these undersized running backs with injury issues, can he stay healthy? He's in a contract year, drafted by the previous GM. There's no way. I mean, I'm guessing a little bit here, but I think it's foregone conclusion. They're not having any extension discussions with him. There's no way they're even considering a contract extension, you know, in the middle of the year in training camp or whatever. They draft Nicholas Singleton. They draft Khalil Mullings a year ago. Tajay Spears is on extremely thin ice. I wouldn't be shocked if he is still traded this summer. Like the Green Bay Packers, who badly need a running back like him after the Josh Jacobs situation. Marshawn Lloyd can't stay healthy, a guy they drafted a couple years ago. A Packers beat writer joked to me the other day, when they finally get rid of Marshawn Lloyd, they're going to let him take the exercise bike with him because all he does is ride. Like, I thought that was a hilarious but maybe slightly mean thing to say. Like, they are in desperate need of a back like that. That's why they drafted Lloyd. I wouldn't be shocked if Spears is traded this summer still at some point. I'm not predicting it per se. I don't think I'm ready to go that bold, but he's in his final year in Tennessee. He's definitely on thin ice.
Yeah, I think the situation around Spears makes this more of an obvious one than maybe Titans fans think or expect or want it to be. But right, I mean, they draft a running back. They drafted a running back last year. He's in the last year of his contract. He hasn't been able to stay healthy, and he's not even the first option in the backfield as it stands already. I will say, I think Spears, if he does stay healthy, or even when he's healthy, is in for a big playmaker role in this offense.
I'm a big fan.
Like, he has the ability to make plays, and I get that he wasn't a great between the tackles runner last year, and a lot of that was the Titans offensive line over the first half of the season was not doing a very effective job in the run game. Now they turned that around the second half of the year, and Tony Pollard had a lot more success in the second half of the year. But I do think that Brian Daboll is going to utilize Tajay Spears. I think he's going to utilize him as a pass catcher. I think Nick Singleton is like a fun player who could be a future committee member of a backfield in Tennessee next season when Pollard and Spears are both likely not here anymore because they are both in the last year of their contracts. But for now, for this year, I do think Spears is going to be not a focal point of the offense, but like a guy who makes plays when plays are needed to be made. And he's done that throughout his time in Tennessee, like converting big third downs, like bursting free on big explosive plays. But he just hasn't been able to be consistent and hasn't been able to stay consistently healthy. And so if he takes any minor step forward just because the environment of the offense around him is better, he could have a productive, sizable year and set himself up to go earn a contract somewhere. I think like it'll be similar to what we saw Chigakonkwo do this past, you know, spring when he went and signed a nice deal with a different team, and the Titans were happy to let him walk because they'd already drafted his replacement in Gunnar Helm. I think the Titans have already drafted somebody that they view in the backfield with a role going forward. I don't want to say like even a 1A, 1B to call Nick Singleton in the future, but at some point, like a committee member of maybe a three-headed backfield that the Titans don't have assembled yet, but could next year. So I think Spears is in line for a decently big season, not like a big, big season. He's not going to go sign a big, big contract, but he could probably earn himself some money as a playmaker next offseason. This year, I think he's on thin ice because of all the circumstances. If he does suffer an injury during training camp, he could lose his spot to Nick Singleton because he's just not on the field to earn the trust of the new coaching staff, etc. For now, I'm expecting good things. Like, I want to say I'm expecting big things, but I don't want to like be hyperbolic and pump up a guy who I don't think is going to be that statistically productive. But I am expecting him to be a contributor in this offense. I do, however, think it's his last year in Tennessee, and the writing for that is all over the wall.
It starts and ends with health and availability for Tajay Spears. I never doubt his ability to make big plays, be explosive and dynamic in space. Can you be consistently available? After the break, we've got more players on offense, the Titans offense, who are on thin ice at OTAs.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. We talk about mental health more openly now, but asking for help can still feel hard, and BetterHelp's latest research confirms it.
BetterHelp's 2026 State of Stigma report surveyed 2,000 Americans and revealed that 85% of Americans believe getting support is wise, yet 74% say society discourages people from actually doing so. What can we as a society do to close this gap between believing in mental health support and actually seeking it out?
Well, we can start by encouraging each other to seek support when we need it. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, you should know that BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform.
All you have to do to get started is fill out a short questionnaire, and BetterHelp takes care of matching you with a therapist. The best part? If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time from any of BetterHelp's tailored recommendations.
Don't let stigma stand in the way of support. Start therapy with BetterHelp. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's Better, H-E-L-P.com. All right, welcome back, everyone. Continuing on with players on thin ice at Titans OTAs right now. Justin, another player on offense? Is that where we're going next?
I am. I'm going to go with veteran wide receiver Calvin Ridley. Now, this one is interesting because Calvin Ridley could put up some great numbers this year, and maybe this is a little hyperbolic. I don't mean to be, but it feels like a foregone conclusion that he's going to be cut next offseason. You know what I mean? Like, the way that they, and I'm going to pull up the contract, because the way that they did this restructure this year to keep him on the team instead of cutting him, what it did was essentially give him a cap number next year of $29.7 million. Essentially double what it is this year at 15.2. They kicked some money down the can. They kicked the can down the road, I should say, to keep him on the team next year. Next year, 2027, contract goes up, $29.7 million. They save $22 million by cutting him with only seven in dead money. No doubt they're cutting Calvin Ridley next offseason. When I say he's on thin ice, to be fair around this conversation, I mean regarding his role on offense this year. I think you and I have been very clear with our expectations, and we're in agreement. Carnell Tate is a starting wide receiver, fourth overall pick, no doubt about it. Probably primarily as the X receiver. We think Wandell Robinson will be the every down slot receiver. Yeah. When this team's in 11 personnel, that leaves one spot available to three players, I should say, being Calvin Ridley, Alec Iomanner, and Chimere Dike. Now, Calvin Ridley is best at the Z/flanker receiver spot. That gives him, if you will, maybe an upper hand on that final position in 11 personnel. But I also think Chimere Dike is a really good Z receiver and will compete for those reps. I also think Carnell Tate can play a little Z, which creates room for Alec Iomanner to play X, which takes Calvin Ridley off the field altogether, right, in that scenario. So for me, that's one of the reasons Calvin Ridley is on thin ice. I think he is battling with two young ascending receivers for playing time in Alec Iomanner and Chimere Dike. Guys that, let's be honest, Titans have more invested in from a growth perspective. They want those receivers to be a part of their future. We already know Calvin Ridley isn't a part of their future. And beyond that point, he's got a lot to prove. He was so disappointing last year after a big, all this chemistry with Cam Ward and this,
yeah.
You made a video, the stepbrother, like, was it a stepbrothers thing? Like the whole Cam Ward, Calvin Ridley connection. I'm not throwing you under the bus. I'm just saying there was so,
going to say it wasn't a stepbrothers themed video. I mean, there was a couple clips from stepbrothers in there, but yeah.
Right. Stepbrothers clips in the video of how much we were believing into this connection. He ends up being really disappointing. Focus drops early. Then he has a season-ending injury before the midway point of the year. Calvin Ridley's got a lot to prove this season.
Yeah, I totally agree. This is not just the circumstances of the roster around him changing, although it certainly has. This is also a player who is, you know, declining due to age, due to injury history. I mean, he's going to be working back from a I think it was underplayed how bad the injury he suffered last year. I mean, he broke his leg on a play that looked kind of, I don't know, nondescript. It didn't seem like anything. It wasn't like a gruesome injury in terms of like the televised aspect of watching this play happen. But it was just like, I mean, it was what, the first third down of a game midway through the season, and he converted it and then just like got up or didn't get up. And it was like, uh-oh, Calvin Ridley's hurt. And then he was off the field. And then like a series later, we find out like Calvin Ridley's not coming back. And then after the game, we found out Calvin Ridley actually broke his leg on that play. It was like, what the heck? So that's, I mean, right off the bat, you're working back from something tough. So much competition added to the room. You got potential growth of young players behind him on the roster. There is a connection, a previous relationship, I should say, existing relationship with Brian Daboll. Maybe that like gives Ridley some benefit of the doubt early in the season. Mm-hmm. But if the other players start to emerge in a way that it's like, we just can't keep these guys off the field because every time we put them on the field, they're making plays. And Ridley looks slower or older in any way. I could see him being moved this offseason still. I could see him being moved during the season as we approach the trade deadline, especially if the Titans aren't particularly competitive and what we've seen Mike Borgonzi do with selling off assets around that time of year. And definitely don't think he's back next season. So even if he's on the roster the whole year, by the end of the season, it's the kind of guy where you could see him playing very limited snaps just because you want to get experience and a better look at the younger players, and because those younger players have earned more opportunity. So I'm totally with you on this one. I was so excited for the potential Ward-Ridley connection last season, and like you said, it just didn't really materialize outside of the win in Arizona, which was an awesome game for both Cam Ward and Calvin Ridley to go get a victory. It never really came to fruition. So yeah, I'm with you on Calvin Ridley. I'll throw out another one, Justin, and I'm kind of cheating on this one because I'm going to combine three players into one. And these three players would each have, like, they'd be more deserving of their own mention if the team had done something more at these positions. But for me, number one is Jackson Slater, which it feels weird to say that, like, a sixth-round, second-year player is on thin ice, but allow me to explain. And then I'm going to group him in with Dan Moore and J.C. Latham. Ooh. Dan Moore, extremely overpaid tackle who gave you sort of exactly what you wanted from that position last year. It was like steady, average play. He's not going to kill you. He's not going to be a source of constant, like, we got to send help his way. We're like, we're always worried about what's that. Like, he was solid, but he is still overpaid. And I do think there's a world where this could be his last season in Tennessee. J.C. Latham, I think the hate did go too far on J.C. Latham. I think his mistakes were very visible because they were like holding penalties or false starts that set the offense back, or it was allowing a really bad sack on one play in the whole game, but then that image sticks with you, and it's like, oh, J.C. Latham was terrible on that one out of 65 snaps. He was so bad. But at the same time, he hasn't lived up to being the seventh overall pick quite yet. He hasn't reached his potential. And maybe he takes that step forward this year and reaches that potential. But as of now, I would say that both of those players, Moore and Latham, sort of enter the season on thin ice in a way where it's like they need to establish themselves as foundational pieces of this offensive line if they want to remain on the team the following season, right? Because I guess J.C. Latham will have one more year of his rookie contract, but next offseason is the year you decide if you're picking up his fifth year option, and they might decide they don't. If he has another season that looks like his first two, I don't think they are going to want to pay him what it would cost to keep him for a fifth season when he was drafted by a previous regime and hasn't been coached by this coaching staff. And Mike Borgonzi didn't pick him. And Dan Moore, same thing. Borgonzi signed Dan Moore, but when he was signed, it was sort of like, we're putting a Band-Aid on this position, and hopefully we can find a draft pick to grow into our franchise left tackle. And then Jackson Slater is a guy who's like sort of being handed the a pathway to starting at right guard. He obviously has to beat out Cordell Volson and anyone else they throw into that mix. But I'm not ruling out a scenario where the Titans sign a guard at some point during training camp who sort of just comes in and takes over. It's like, this is my job. Sorry, I'm going to be starting here. And for the tackles, like we talked about it yesterday, I wouldn't totally rule out them signing. In fact, I kind of expect them to still sign at some point a swing tackle. And if that swing tackle is like a Cornelius Lucas or somebody, then it's like, okay, that's a swing tackle. He's a backup, whatever. But if it's like a Jack Conklin, which I'm not expecting again, but you never know with Mike Borgonzi. And like if Jack Conklin comes in and it's like, wow, he actually looks kind of healthy and looks like he turned back the clock a couple years. Is there like a world in week 8 where J.C. Latham or Dan Moore are struggling and they're like, okay, we signed you as a swing tackle, but you're a veteran who started a lot of games. Get in the starting lineup and save this offensive line. I'm just saying if they do sign somebody, one of these offensive linemen could be at risk. As of now, I expect Jackson Slater to win the starting right guard job. That's why I threw his name in. I expect these tackles to start for as long as they're healthy, which is hopefully all 17 games this year. But I do think like there is a world where they're on thin ice going forward, and it's sort of like a prove it season for all three guys. Because Jackson Slater, even if he wins a starting job this year, that doesn't mean he's going to win it and hold on to it for his career. Like he has to go prove it for 17 games that he can be the team's starting right guard. J.C. Latham has to go prove for 17 games that he can be worth paying what it costs to pay a player when you draft them seventh overall. And Dan Moore has to continue to prove he's worth his contract and that Mike Borgonzi shouldn't be looking to draft an offensive tackle in the first round next year. These guys have a lot to prove. That, to me, means they're on thin ice.
Yeah, I can agree with you on Moore and Slater. I don't think I'm there on Latham, and I'll explain why. Although you said some things that I agree with. I'll start with Dan Moore. I think that, as you kind of said, the Titans got what they paid for. I think they paid for league. I wouldn't say solid or stellar, whatever word you use. I'm nitpicking. But I would say they paid for him to be like league average. And that's exactly what they got. I absolutely think that Mike Borgonzi did that willingly on purpose, knew what he was going to get out of Dan Moore, and probably wasn't disappointed with what he got. I think he got what he knew he was going to get. And he was willing to overpay and Band-Aid it to buy him time. It's a bad roster. They were going to draft a rookie quarterback at number one. A lot of holes to fill. They decided, hey, let's kick this. It's what I just said about Calvin Ridley to a degree. Let's kick the can down the road on needing a franchise left tackle and address other areas of the roster. Now, they can get out of the Dan Moore contract next offseason. And I'll tell you, every way too early Titans 2027 mock draft that I'm publishing on SI, it's probably going to have them taking an offensive tackle in the top 10, 15, whatever it is they're projected to pick according to Super Bowl odds. Because I do think they're probably going to cut Dan Moore next, unless he's way better than he was this past year. I think they're strongly going to be tempted to cut him and draft his replacement and kind of prioritize a franchise left tackle. The reason I don't agree with J.C. Latham is it's really hard to replace, I think, both starting tackles in one offseason. And if you are cut, and I think Dan Moore is the more realistic one to replace, right? Because it's a bloated cap number. You could save a bunch of money against the cap by cutting him. Like, what are you going to do? Pay a high-end right tackle and then draft a left tackle? Like, it's possible.
No, but there's a world where Dan Moore, like, takes – he's still a youngish player. I mean, he played 4 years in Pittsburgh, 1 year in Tennessee. It's not like he's a super established veteran. There's a world where Dan Moore shows continuous improvement under a new offensive line coach, and J.C. Latham either gets hurt or takes a step back in some way or doesn't get the mental stuff down, and you go into next offseason thinking, well, we actually like Dan Moore. Maybe we're going to like extend and restructure this contract to lower the cap hit or whatever, but now we need a new right tackle. So I agree. I don't think there's a world where they're looking to replace both tackles in one offseason. I also think there's a world where both guys prove they're not the long-term solution, which, as hard as it is to accept as a fan, a sports fan of any team, it's like more likely than not, most of the time, unless your team happens to be putting it all together to go win a championship, more likely than not, the guys that you're hoping pan out into something, they usually don't. I'm sorry, they just usually don't. So hang on. What I'm trying to say is there's a world where you want to replace Dan Moore in the 2027 offseason. You still have Latham under contract for one more year if you don't pick up his fifth-year option. And you're like, okay, JC, this is really it. Make or break, now or never, prove it year, because you're in a contract year. And if he doesn't prove it, then you're going after a right tackle in the 2028 offseason. So you end up replacing both, but not in the same year.
What you're saying is very possible. Don't get me wrong. I just, like, if I'm going to play the law of averages game, in my mind, J.C. Latham entering year three versus Dan Moore entering year six, we probably have a better idea of what Dan Moore is at this point than we do J.C. Latham. I think J.C. Latham is better than Dan Moore. I think he's consistently looked better than Dan Moore. And the fact that he's played three fewer years in the NFL strongly tells me if one of these guys is going to grow and ascend like you just said, that's possible. The law of averages says it'll be J.C. Latham. It won't be Dan Moore, right? And look, J.C. Latham could get hurt again. He got hurt last year. He hurt his hip during training camp. I think that had a profound impact on how disappointing his sophomore season was. Profound impact. Remember, he missed a bunch of games, came back, got killed against Max Crosby and the Raiders in his first game back from a serious hip injury. I just don't think J.C. Latham is likelier to get hurt than anyone else on the roster. It's not like he's been an injury-prone guy, right? Like, it happens. The hip happened. That's a brutal injury in the middle of the year for a big guy to get training camp and then re-aggravates it in week one. I like J.C. Latham. I'll say, back to agreeing with you, the fifth-year option, we just saw it, $20 million for Peter Skoronski. Like, it's a lot of money for O-linemen. I see a world where even if he has an average to decent year this year, that they decline it and say, hey, 2027 is going to be a true make or break for you. But I like J.C. Latham. I'm personally not ready to put him on the thin ice conversation, but I'm glad we got to have this back and forth debate. Quickly on Jackson Slater, I don't disagree with his inclusion here because I think they really want him to win the right guard job. They're going to give him every opportunity to win the right guard job. And I think it's okay to put him on the thin ice conversation because that expectation comes with expectations, I guess, or comes with pressure, I should say, maybe to switch up the word there. They want him to win it. Doesn't guarantee that he will. And they do have a veteran guy in Cordell Volson who has started and played a lot of football that's going to be chomping at the bit every time Jackson Slater has a disappointing practice or a disappointing rep. Cordell Volson's right there raising his hand going, hey, I've done this. I've played this position a lot. And on top of it, if you want to take it a step further for the pressure and thin ice, maybe it doesn't play into the scenario this year, but they also drafted Fernando Carmona, where if Slater isn't looking like the long-term solution, they'll have a plan C, who's a young guy that they could develop. So I get it where you're coming on Jackson Slater. We all want him to win the right guard job, but in life we don't always get what we want. So I think he belongs here. After the final break, we're going to come back, talk about a couple guys on the defensive side of the ball.
Oh, welcome back, Justin. And let's clarify something before we get to the last two here. And that's that just because a player may be on thin ice right now, based on the, you know, the roster around them, that doesn't mean that they're going to fall through that ice. Like, so a couple of these players we're talking about, I mean, I especially expect Spears and like two-thirds of the offensive linemen we talked about to outperform and like not be considered on thin ice at all by the end of the season, because they go out and they play well and they establish themselves. So I just want to make that clear really quick. But the next guy we're going to talk about is a guy that I think might be the next most obvious name after Will Levis. Again, if you're just like looking at the roster and you said, give me two players that are definitely on thin ice, Will Levis would be my first choice. I think this one would be my second choice. The Titans draft Anthony Hill Jr. in the second round. He's the Robert Saleh prototype linebacker from an athletic and instinctual perspective, which means that Cody Barton is officially on thin ice. And I think Cody Barton will... I just don't see Cody Barton playing a lot of snaps by the time we get to like November, December on the of this schedule. I think he could start the year playing a lot, because that's a lot of times what happens, especially when you have a young, exciting rookie that you just drafted. Fans get a little ahead of themselves in terms of how much and how early they expect to see that guy playing. I don't expect to see Anthony Hill playing a majority of snaps in week one. Maybe he does. Maybe he goes out in training camp and impresses and surprises. But I think that you see Cody Barton start the year, at least with playing the majority of the snaps, and then slowly, week by week, he loses ground. And it's almost like there's nothing you can even do, Cody. Like, the only reason Cody Barton doesn't lose his starting job is if Anthony Hill disappoints. It's not if Cody Barton is playing out of his mind, because I just think they're going to want to get their highly drafted young player on the field. Cedric Gray is not losing his job to Cody Barton after the way he played last year. I mean, they would have to play a lot of three linebacker looks for Cody Barton to play a lot of snaps. So to me, easy one. He's on thin ice.
And we expect them to play some three linebacker sets, but I would almost say, like, if you want to consider it or kind of use the as interchangeable with like base defense, like maybe that's like 15 to 20% of the time. The rest of the time you're, you know, nickel and dime and you know, different personnel packages. But we both agreed on including Cody Barton on this list. Look, writing's on the wall, and inevitable. Time is a flat circle, whatever cheesy movie reference you want to use. I think Anthony Hill's draft was drafted to have a huge impact on this defense. And look, if he disappoints, gets hurt, like again, we remember how excited we were for Cedric Gray as a rookie, and absolutely nothing happened, and he was hurt, and he never took the field. And then even his sophomore season started, it was like, we think James Williams is going to be the starter because Cedric Gray's like, it wasn't until training camp that Cedric Gray in the preseason started emerging a little bit. So you got to take these things slowly, let the process play out. But I'm excited about Anthony Hill, and maybe I can't help myself a little bit.
There was circumstances around. I mean, Gray was dealing with an injury. Right. He was a fourth round pick. Hill was like, you know, there was January mock drafts. Yeah, but there was January mock draft, and this doesn't mean much, but there was January mock drafts ahead of the Broncos taking Hill at 31 or 30, whatever they pick, would have picked, 29, whatever they would have picked before they traded the pick for Jalen Waddle. And who, like, if the Broncos hadn't traded that pick, who knows? The report was
Titans
that the
had to
Titans
trade up in front of them from at 60 or whatever to take him. And I think it's been confirmed that the Broncos would have taken Hill there, strongly suggested.
Right.
And the Broncos traded out of that pick as soon as the Titans traded up and took Hill. So a lot of proof.
There's no way to know if the Broncos would have been like, hey, you know what? We love the kid. Maybe a tiny bit early by consensus board, but who cares? We're taking him in the first. Like, he could have been a first-round linebacker.
Yeah.
So my point is, different circumstances. I get what you're saying. Like, we shouldn't, again, get ahead of ourselves and just expect that Anthony Hill will be playing 80% of snaps in week two.
But I do expect it, damn it. I don't care if we shouldn't. I do. I'm going to do it anyway. I'll leave room to be disappointed if I'm disappointed. Like, I think the world of Anthony Hill as a prospect and as a fit in this Robert Saleh defense. But I think you hit the nail on the head. Like, to keep expectations realistic, I think he gradually replaces Barton as the season progresses forward. It's probably mostly Barton in week one. If it's not, that means Anthony Hill had a hell of a summer, hell of a training camp, hell of a preseason. That's the best thing that could happen to this team right now on this specific topic. But I think it's a gradual process. You want to close out with one more that we maybe shouldn't spend a lot of time on, because we actually did a full episode on him pretty recently.
And I also think this last one, Justin, is sort of our most questionable to call this player on thin ice. But I will say, when you are a highly drafted player at a highly valued position that is a position of need that gets sort of restocked in various ways all around you, you become on thin ice. And of course, I'm talking about Femi Oladejo, who, like, if Femi Oladejo doesn't go out and have a good season, he will go down as a bust of a second round pick. I mean, yeah, a Kevin Dodd level bust of a second round pick. So while they added Keldrick Falk around him, they added a number of free agents or traded for players like Jermaine Johnson and Jacob Martin. Like, he still has a chance to go be a pretty big part of this defense. Mm-hmm. When you had Robert Saleh at the podium getting asked, you know, how do you make sure that you don't have Jeffrey Simmons on the sideline for a big down? He says, like, everything we do with the rotation is to make sure our horses are out there for the big ones to get after the passer. And he names the horses. And he named Femi. He was fifth out of five, but he still named Femi as one of the horses. So I think Femi's probably having at least a good OTA spring period so far. As much as we may have not seen that on the field so much, but that doesn't mean he's not crushing it in meeting rooms and individual drills that the media is not at. Like, we don't know what Robert Saleh sees, but Robert Saleh put him in that five. And Justin, when we did the Femi episode, I put these tweets on the screen for our audience, but the full disclosure thing, transparency to the audience, is that I found those tweets while I was editing the show. After we recorded the show, our audio audience, who's just listening to the podcast, has no idea what I'm talking about right now because they didn't even see it. The 49ers showed a ton of interest in Femi Oladejo. And I don't know how this hasn't been more reported. Like, some people took it the wrong way when Robert Saleh said, you know, Femi was drafted as a 3-4 end, but we were evaluating him as a 4-3 end in San Francisco. That was some people interpreted that as, we really liked Femi as a 4-3 end in San Francisco. All he said was we were evaluating him as a 4-3 end. But if you read the tea leaves and you look at him working with 49ers defensive line coach last year at the Senior Bowl all week and meeting with 49ers staffers at the combine, and like, there was actually a ton of interest showed by San Francisco in Femi Oladejo's direction. Perhaps Robert Saleh really does like him. That said, if you really like him, do you add as many pieces around him as you do? Yes, because you want to rotate a lot, but also it's a fail-safe, like, fallback option in case he doesn't put it together. I don't know how you could say Femi is not on thin ice, even if it feels a little harsh, maybe, to say that he is on thin ice.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think, listen, this fan base, anytime you bring up his name right now, I think there's a lot of grace for him based on the first year. Yeah. Oh, you know, he got hurt, he flashed. There's a lot of grace. I'm okay with it. I'm not saying I'm not okay with it. But what I will say is, if he has another down year or gets hurt again, I promise you that grace will disappear. This entire fan base will be ready, most of them, will be ready to say he's a second round bust. 2 years, he's done nothing, or he's been hurt, whatever it is, people will be ready to call him a bust this time next year if this sophomore season doesn't go significantly better than the rookie year did. As you said, there's excitement about him, a lot of opportunity. Robert Saleh keeps calling out his name. But they also have Jermaine Johnson and Jacob Martin. John Franklin Myers can play out there occasionally. Jalen Harrell's on this roster. Keldrick Falk. They have options and plans that Femi Oladejo, if he disappoints, gets hurt, whatever it is, could quickly fall by the wayside out of this rotation almost altogether if things don't go well. So I think we'd be doing the analysis a disservice by not admitting that he's definitely on thin ice. It's a huge, any guy, second round pick, had zero sacks as an edge rusher, was healthy for six, seven games, whatever it was, is absolutely on thin ice in any NFL office, any NFL field heading into their second offseason. That's just the nature of the beast. I think that's going to do it for today's episode of the Music City Audible podcast. We'll be back tomorrow, Wednesday afternoon, evening, whatever you want, whatever time zone you're in, talking Tennessee Titans football. Remember, Friday will be a regular live stream, 10:30 a.m. Central. Wednesday, Thursday will be regular episodes of the Music City Audible, 5 days a week, as per usual, until you tune in tomorrow to watch Wednesday's episode of MCA and get your daily Titans coverage. Y'all stay safe out there and tighten up.
A Broadway Sports Media production.